Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Kennedy, and you tune in today because you're sick of trying every fad diet under the sun and training yourself into the ground without seeing any results. That's why I'm here, to share the most effective ways to eat and train for sustainable and real results.
All right, what's up, legends? Welcome back to this week's episode of the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. I'm here with Paul McKinnon from The Balanced Runner. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, thanks, mate. How are you?
Fantastic. Well, pretty good, considering I just found out that for the last 25 years I've been running wrong. So, guys, we've just wrapped up a bit of a running session near MSAC here in Albert Park, and Paul's just kind of taken me through bits and pieces on my running to try and make it a bit more efficient and get my running style a bit more relaxed to make the running a bit easier and more enjoyable. And so, firstly, thanks.
No worries, it was
really good. It's a bit of an eye-opener. And we're going to talk a bit today about different bits and pieces from that session, but also a few other questions I've got, and I know that the listeners have got as well. As I said, we're going to go through some questions at the end. But before we get into any of that, do you want to just give the listeners a bit of a rundown on who you are and what you've done and what you do?
So my background is actually not in running, it's in hockey. Played elite level hockey for probably 15 years in the National League here. Played 6 years professionally overseas in Holland and Spain. Played indoor hockey for Australia in 2 Indoor Hockey World Cups.
I
started when I was 4. However, you know, running was probably a strength of mine.
Yeah.
I always loved it. Always did a lot of it outside of hockey.
Yeah.
And then, you know, study. I did PE teaching, sports science as a major. And they all just kind of tied in together. On top of that, learning what I coach now from a guy called Bex Anderson in Canberra, and learned from him probably 7-8 years.
Right.
And I guess putting those three things together and understanding how people learn and learning languages and that sort of stuff is all just kind of helped with that communication side of it, as well as the technical side behind it with sports science and learning from Bex.
Yeah, and so obviously now the biggest part of your business is actually correcting people's running technique and running coaching, yeah?
Yeah. Look, that's... Yeah. Pretty much all of it, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I do. I work one-on-one with athletes, and I say athletes because anyone who I see, I call one of my athletes, whether or not they're just starting out running or if they're professional.
Yeah.
They're all undertaking an athletic endeavor, just at different levels.
Yeah, right. And so before, I do want to chat about what we did today, because it was like, firstly, the way you actually taught it, took me through a session was perfect, because as we'll talk about, like, that kinesthetic awareness stuff and getting me to become a bit more aware of each different part of my body while I'm running was really helpful and made a lot of sense. It made it a lot easier once we made a few changes to figure out what wasn't exactly correct before. I still can't get over I've been doing it wrong for 25 years.
Shit. Mate, you're not alone there. Plenty of people come later on in life and say 40 years or 50 years.
So firstly, with most people, so I know it's a bit of a generalization, but when you look at most people's running technique, just us, you know, the average Joe, the weekend warrior that goes out for a trot a few times a week, what's probably one of the biggest things that you see wrong or inefficient with people's running? I know there's a list of different things, but what's probably the most common?
Most common, and I think we spoke about it with yours a little bit, their counter movement is coming from the wrong part of the body.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden it's placing pressures on parts of the body that weren't designed to work in that way. And without going into specifics and being able to show, it's sort of, they're just moving in the wrong places.
Yeah.
So a lot of the things I look for is movement where it shouldn't be.
Okay.
And then trying to increase movement where it should be.
Yeah.
But then also changing body
position. What's an example of that for someone that's...
Similar for yours, like if you're not getting movement through the correct plane or through the, you know, the arms where we want and in the correct position,
yeah,
then all of a sudden the body's going to find it from elsewhere.
Yeah.
So yeah, arms is a big one.
Yeah. So my situation, for those that are listening, like, I was getting not much movement from the arms and probably way too open through the chest and shoulders and getting a lot of tightness through the upper back. So then a lot of the movement for me was coming through the mid to lower back.
Which is
putting pressure on a place that you don't want pressure on.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also changing the planes of movement. So if you're thinking about a twisting movement, it's a horizontal plane.
Yeah.
And we're trying to get flight and float from running. And
yeah.
then you've got this flat horizontal movement.
Mm.
So you're actually working through a horizontal plane rather than actually getting some vertical movements.
Movements, yeah.
Yeah. And I guess that's where the momentum is, rather than thinking about momentum from, you know, like a rolling stone kind of momentum. It's actually momentum to help the legs do what they do more efficiently.
Yeah.
rather than working against it.
Yeah, and something you brought up when we caught up for coffee the other day was about how a lot of physios or even myotherapists or whatever, which is not necessarily, like, it's not obviously not their fault, but like you get told a lot of the time when you get a sore back or whatever from running that you're not using your glutes, or your glutes are underactive, or hamstrings are underactive, or lazy, or weak, whatever it may be. But as you're explaining, a lot of the time, people aren't even in a position to be able to use glutes and hammies.
Yeah, spot on. So it's not that they're incorrect in regards to, you know, poor glute function or poor activation. It's that when they're running and the movements they're making, it's not allowing the glute to function. So there's no way that they're going to be strong or activated when the movement they do, you know, thousands of times per day isn't including the glute.
The glute, yeah.
So you can go and do all the activation and strengthening skills that you want, but if you don't change the movement, then it's not actually going to be tapping into the glute. So I always say, you know, strength doesn't change movement. Movement changes movement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It makes a lot of sense when you think about it, because I was very similar. Like, I actually did, my hamstrings and glutes were shit house. So I did need to strengthen them up. But, you know, for those that have that follow any of the lifting stuff I do now, obviously strength, the glutes and hamstrings at the moment is probably like the strongest they've ever been. I don't see how getting them any stronger would improve my running, to be perfectly honest. But, and it wasn't going to, because as the stuff we went through today, I just wasn't even in the right position to utilize it.
No, and not only the position, when we start to talk about your hips and the movement through the hips, if you're starting to increase the amount of movement there, you can't actually hold stability. So if you can't hold stability, then you can't hold strength.
Yeah.
If you can't hold that stability, you can't put power through the ground.
Yeah.
Because you're actually moving from the top part of that stability point.
Yeah, right. And so what we did today, we basically, what you explained to me, which when we talk about lifting in the gym, so let's say, for example, a squat, deadlift, or whatever, the first thing that I'll set up is someone's foot position. Then we basically work from the ground up. And for me today, it was the complete opposite. So my arms were literally stuffing up most of the, pretty much the whole thing. So we made one small change to my arm movement, and all of a sudden everything else started to flow a bit better, and everything felt a lot more efficient, and was nowhere near as much rotation. And then you'd get me back to my old way of running, which I explained to Paul was very painful and almost a bit depressing every time he made me do it again, just to remind me of how shit it was before. And that's literally just making one change to the arms, which was pretty insane, really.
Yeah, and as you said, if you think about the first place you start when you're doing your deadlift, or and as I said, the feet are stationary, stationary through those movements.
Yeah.
But running, the feet are certainly not stationary.
Mm.
So you can't really start from the feet when something, or, you know, there's a fair few odd movements are happening above it.
Yeah.
As I said to you, like, the feet are stuck between a rock, the ground, and a hard place, which is, you know, unbalanced, uneven movements up above. And they just have to compensate with what's happening.
Yeah.
And they just got to land and move the way they do.
Yeah.
And that's why their outcomes.
Yeah.
So you start the other end, because you can actually get some real benefit from balancing up the arms to start with, getting them moving from the correct area and in the correct plane for you as an individual.
Yeah.
And you're different from me and different from someone else who I'll see tomorrow.
Yeah.
So it's finding it specific to you.
Yeah, okay.
Because as we spoke about, the anatomy of the shoulder is not at 90 degrees, so how can you swing straight?
Yeah,
you know,
I've got to
find it right for you.
That's exactly right. And another one that you brought up that I thought was interesting, and it makes a lot of, again, all this stuff makes sense once you actually like think about it and then go and do it. It's pretty practical, but for those that run a lot, the typical complaint is, oh, tight hip flexors, or I've been running a lot, so that's why my hip flexors are tight. When you're explaining it, almost shouldn't be should be the opposite. Yeah. So you shouldn't be tightening up hip flexors by running, because once you're actually using the glutes and hamstrings to push off and accelerate, your hip flexors are almost on full stretch, not contraction, whereas a lot of people are thinking about that knee drive and lifting from the knees and pulling up through the hip flexor first.
Yeah, I can imagine 90% of people who run have been told at one point, you know, drive your knees, lift your knees more. And yet all that is flexion through hip flexors. And hip flexors aren't strong muscles, you know. They're long, thin bands.
Yeah.
So when talking about the glutes and the glute function is to create hip extension through the hips.
Yeah.
If you're in a good position and you start to utilize those glutes are working in a dual function. You
know? Yeah.
So not only are they putting power through the ground through hip extension. They're also flexing or extending the hip flexors.
Yeah.
And once they start to stretch and lengthen, all of a sudden you're creating elasticity, And so that's the second function of the glute. And then once that lets go, you know, effectively you're just letting go of rubber band, which naturally draws your knees higher.
Yeah.
So instead of
without decelerating, slowing yourself down. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And what I said to you was like, people who have tight hip flexors is because they're lifting their knees a lot and they're not getting hip extension.
Yeah.
So what they're doing is just shortening their hip flexors over and over and over again.
Right.
You know, people for 1-2 hours of running.
Yeah.
And wonder why they have tight hip flexors.
Yeah.
It's not a result.
Along with sitting down all day and all the other shit that comes with it.
Well, unfortunately, like the sitting down cops the bad rap.
Yeah.
You know,
so you reckon a lot of the time it could be more to do with the actual training they're doing.
Especially if it is running. Like, you know, you do that movement for an hour.
Yeah.
Which is just a flexion of a hip flexor. And then you sit in a shortened state. Of course, it's going to relax in that shortened state.
Yeah.
So it's being overworked. And then you sit in the shortened state. So it's going to tighten up.
Yeah.
But then the first thing we think about, we're trying to give something meaning, and often it's the wrong meaning. It's sitting, I'm sitting down all day.
Yeah.
So I'll get a stand-up desk and wonder why my hip flexor is still tight.
Still tight, yeah. Still can't rub shit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's overactive through the hip flexors through running rather
than
being in a good position, getting, you know, hip extension, which means the femur comes back. You know, ABC, all of a sudden you go, oh, I don't have tight hip flexors anymore. Sit back down for work.
So one thing you said to me the other day is that how people tend to separate running technique from sprinting and just going for a run, say going for like a 5K jog.
Yeah.
But you think the opposite.
Well,
not the opposite, but you think there's a lot more similarities to what people think.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, efficient movement is efficient movement.
Mm.
It's running.
Yeah.
Yeah. The really big difference is how much power and energy you're putting into your movement to cover a short distance fast rather than a long distance still fast. They're not... To look at them, they're not the same because the amount of power going through them and the amount of strength that you need and require to hold, you know, that stability is completely different.
Different, yeah.
But the efficiency of the movements is still pretty similar.
Similar, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Do you watch guys like, let's say, for example, Usain Bolt and stuff like that, and do you enjoy watching sprinters? Like, do you take bits and pieces from them and see that similarity between watching, like, someone do, say, for example, like a 1500 or a 5K run?
Sure, because if anything, they sometimes highlight movements because they're so fast and so powerful or need to be able to go that distance. Those smaller movements become more obvious.
Yeah.
They're quicker.
Yeah, yeah.
So you need to be able to, you know, like concentrate in them. But sometimes they're actually bigger because of how much power. It's like if you need to arrest a movement, you know, like, and we'll use arm swing, you need to be more powerful because they're coming through so quick. So you need to actually be stronger to be able to arrest the movement, bounce it back, and continuous. So you can actually see that movement.
And aside from the fact that, let's say, someone like, use the example again, Usain Bolt has a lot more fast twitch fibers than slow twitch fibers. If he was to build up some form of aerobic capacity and build up the Ks in his legs, do you reckon the fact that he does have such good technique in a sprint, he could be a good and hold his form over a longer distance? Or do you reckon it just come down to specificity and just it'd be completely different?
He's a phenomenal athlete, so I'm sure it'd be pretty good at most things that he did. When you start to change from, say, 100, 200, and originally it was a 400, so a lot of 400 runners go out to 8 or 15.
Yeah,
and he's back in. So in those middle distance, I'm sure he could be okay because he's long and range. Got pretty good technique. I don't know. That's hard. That's
a hard
one to question. Yeah. But with good technique, I'm sure he can do okay.
Yeah.
I can't imagine you eating 40 chicken nuggets and wanting to run 1,500 metres. No,
you have a difference between 10 seconds and few minutes, I don't even know what the fucking word I'm trying to think of, but anyway, common is tight shin or shin splints with running. And a lot of time it does have, I guess, well, you can answer this better than me, but I'm assuming it does have a bit to do with the surface people are running on. But also, what is it? What is the reason behind it?
Depends on the shin splint. You know, like shin splints.
Or even just tight around the shins, like, because I get tight tibia anterior,
Yeah, and look, that's one. One's, you know, the periosteum of the tibia starts to get, depending on. And there's also one around kind of the medial side towards posterior, the shin that people have, which is in between like the muscle, the sheath and the bone.
Mm.
So it can actually change, like, or not, sorry, change isn't the right word. It can be something like three different things.
Three different parts,
call what a shin splint is.
Okay,
like there's no descript definition for each one of those.
Each
they're the three most common that I'll see.
Mm.
Can be a combination of all the above, like the surface you're running on, the movement you make into the ground, how you land,
yeah.
and also the loading in regards to how much you're doing.
Yeah.
So I spoke to one of my other athletes the other day who's a podiatrist, and we were talking about the two different meanings of loading.
Yeah.
So loading being how many kilometers you run per week, and also the intensity
yeah.
in which you run, but also the loading you put through your body on each footstep.
Yeah.
Often the first thing with running is about the loading, which is how much you're running and
yeah.
the intensity. So you're starting to get that shin pain, whichever one it is.
Yeah.
Decrease that loading.
Yeah.
And less so is it, or less importance is put on how much you're actually loading through the movement.
Yeah.
So then we start to think about those
right.
two things. And the movement is what we talk about, what I talk about it, and the technique side of things
mm.
and changing the load that you put into the ground, similar to what you felt today.
Yeah.
From
such a big difference.
A positive change, how much lighter it is and how much easier on the body it is.
Mm.
So therefore, you're not taking that impact.
Yeah.
For you, you're talking about Tib Ant, and a lot of the time it's because you're getting that...
heel strike.
Well... Yes, but also the dorsiflexion, you know, like
right.
actually lifting the toes toward to get that heel strike.
To get the heel strike,
if you're
yeah.
doing that, Tib Ant is on.
Yeah.
And if you're having that on for a long time, then like anything, if you've got a muscle contracted
yeah.
for a,
yeah, yeah.
an extended period of time.
Some people get tight forearms because a lot of the back work they're doing, they're over flexing their wrists or
yeah.
squeezing tail with the hands. Yeah, similar thing. Tennis elbow always comes into the forearms. And
yeah, and that's kind of a repetitive movement thing. So
yeah.
it goes into the
yeah.
to the tendon and starts to cause problems there.
Yeah.
I had a guy who turned up, couldn't run a kilometer without having to stop because he had, you know, like Tib Ants would pump up to the point where he just had to stop.
Yeah, right.
Like the muscle.
Yeah, I had that for a while.
Yeah. Well, and it'd
yeah.
be similar to this. That
yeah.
He got, you know, referred to a surgeon, went to the surgeon. Surgeon said, well, we got compartment syndrome. We need to have surgery and, you know, slice open the muscle sheath to allow
yeah.
its space,
because yeah.
that's what's happening. It's taking away all its space,
yeah,
the
yeah.
sheath. Whereas we started to change his technique, didn't need surgery. 6 weeks later, he's running his first 5K. Once you actually start to take that loading away from that muscle
yeah.
and the movement is allowing
yeah.
switch on and off,
yeah, yeah.
He didn't have it. So it wasn't the fact that he had compartment syndrome. It was just that he was overworking a particular muscle to the point couldn't actually get rid of the blood.
Yeah.
So then you had to stop.
Repeatedly,
yeah.
over and over and over again.
Yeah, yeah. And that's one example.
Yeah.
And that's kind of along the lines of the example that you were talking about
yeah.
with that shin pad.
Yeah.
yeah.
I'm sure a lot of people are probably listening, and some of the stuff we're talking about is probably just going like straight over there. But so do you, we can talk about this after, but have you got videos on your website and on like Instagram and stuff like that? I'll have the links to all Paul's social media stuff here, but like videos that kind of go over a little bits of technique stuff or?
Less so the videos of the technique changes. Like I'll
yeah.
show differences between, you know, within a session or even
yeah.
within, over the course of like,
yeah.
two or three sessions of someone being able to change.
Yeah.
And sustainably change.
Mm.
So it's not just, okay, off you go, and as you felt,
yeah,
you know, like I think I'm running about, I'm not sure, but it's
yeah.
you know, 6 weeks later, look at the difference.
Difference, yeah. And for anyone that's listening that's around the Melbourne area, like I said, I'll have all Paul's details in there because, like I'm wishing I had done something similar to what we did today, like fucking years ago,
yeah,
because it's something that's so like we were there for what, maybe how long, 30 to 40 minutes,
yeah, 45
like
minutes,
yeah.
yeah,
45 minutes, and in such a short period of time, how it can drastically change the difference in how a run feels is pretty nuts.
Yeah.
When you think about like every time I run now, because it has been so uncomfortable, the whole time fucking running for half an hour thinking, all right, change this, see if that feels better. Change that, see if that feels better.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of what I guess what I do is it's just think about one thing,
mm.
and as you felt like that domino effect of the changes,
yeah,
down,
yeah.
and it also gives the muscles an opportunity to adapt. So
yeah.
it's not this huge change, and then it's a big shock to the body. It's
yeah.
like small changes over the whole body,
yeah,
which turns into quite a large you know,
change.
Healing change, but
yeah.
as far as the body's adaptation, they're small changes.
Yeah.
Rather than just going, okay, that's how you move, let's get to this.
Yeah.
And not showing you on a video how you should be moving, just going, okay, how do you feel now?
Yeah.
What is it you're doing?
Yeah.
Let's change it. What's the changes?
Mm.
It allows you to then get the body to adapt. You know, that muscle memory changes.
Yeah.
In one way, like that's the beauty of running, that if you go out for a run, even for, you know, 5K run.
Yeah.
Or 2K run.
Yeah.
Whatever it may be, you in a 5K run, you've probably got 5,000 opportunities of doing this new movement.
Yeah.
So you've got 5,000 times where your muscle memory is actually changing.
Yeah.
If you're thinking about, you know, say a squat or a deadlift or, you know, shooting a basketball.
Yeah, yeah.
To get that many, do that many times, you're going to be there for a while. Yeah. You know, it's going to be pretty
good. Like doing 5,000 deadlifts.
Yeah, so, exactly. So, I don't know if I've done that many times. In our regards, it's like the beauty of it is that if you're given the right stimulus, it can change pretty quick.
Mm.
But it can also work the other way as well. If you're in the wrong one, or if you start to, if you get an injury, or if you get a blister, it can change the other way pretty quickly as well.
Yeah.
So running as a skill is pretty fluid.
Yeah.
You know, like you can change it really quickly and then you stay on top of it and you get better and better and better. But you can start to kind of go the other way as well.
Decline as well, yeah. When you look at, and we spoke about this the other day, when you look at, say, a sport such as AFL, where there's just a shitload of soft tissue injuries and hamstrings being probably one of the bigger ones, what do you put that down to? And it can be different from individual to individual, but is there something that really sticks out to you that could be improved that would be reducing the amount of hamstrings that are done in not only obviously professional sport like AFL, but just amateur league footy and your average Joe that rocks up on the weekend and plays a game of footy and then trains a couple times throughout the week?
Look, notwithstanding obviously the load that they go through and the amount of fatigue that they have to running that much, you know, and high speed, you know, I think the biggest thing for them is that it's almost like they're pulling through hamstring rather than extending through glute. So they're loading up a longer, thinner muscle to create that power and over long distances at speed.
At speed, yeah.
Yeah, so, and, you know, they're athletes.
And under this huge fatigue.
Yeah, and then you put the fatigue on it. So it's not that they're just, you know, probably overloading a particular muscle that isn't supposed to be working that hard.
Yeah.
Certainly within the normal function of running.
Yeah,
that hard, and it's kind of, it's targeting hamstring more than glute.
Yeah.
So they could probably hold on to it for a while.
Okay.
It'd still be quite quick.
Yeah.
But if they're pulling through the ground rather than extending, then at one point or another, it's going to get fatigue and tear. So the biggest thing I'd say is, you know, like that overstriding pulling mechanism,
okay,
and then under fatigue.
And so the pulling is because of the fact that they're overstriding, or the body, like
a little bit, sometimes it could be from rotation, could be from you know, trying to run faster or run further, and that's what they've thought is going to work for them. But you know, like that is a generalization, as we said at the start. Is I think a lot of the things I think about is like movement times load, or load times movement.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So it's not just one, it's not just the other.
Yeah, exactly.
It's, put the two together.
Barring injury, do you reckon you could basically get anyone and get them to run efficiently? Because you know, especially I hear a lot, I don't know if you hear it a lot as well, but typical thing you hear is, you know, oh, I'm not a runner.
Yeah,
I've never been a runner. Just can't run. Like, do you reckon anyone, you can basically, if with the right time and the amount of time that they put towards that technique, can become an efficient runner to the point where they can build up their aerobic capacity, obviously, but...
Yeah, certainly a whole lot more efficient than what they are from now.
Yeah.
You know, they might not turn out to be Eliud Kipchoge, like world record marathon runner, but I can guarantee they'll be a whole lot more efficient than what they are now.
Yeah.
Like, I sent you that thing this morning, you know, no one gets taught how to run. No one. As a kid, you don't.
Yeah.
Everything else, it's like every other sport, every other skill you do, it's, I know, we'll teach you how to do it.
Mm.
But running is
so true.
It's this thought of, no, you run how you run.
Yeah.
You just do more of it, you do it faster. But running's a skill just like everything else.
Yeah.
You know, like swimming. The reason why you get taught to swim is because obviously the outcomes can be pretty dire.
Yeah,
you know, like it's not great.
Yeah.
It's not just an injury, is it? But for what you do, like if you get someone into the gym and you don't teach them the correct technique, they'll get injured pretty quick.
Yeah.
You know, like what I call is, like, you know, that's a stab to the heart.
Yeah.
But running's a death by a thousand cuts. Like, if you don't get taught the correct way to do it, if you don't do it the correct way, then something's going to happen.
Yeah.
So you can still get taught to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think, random question, do you think anyone will break, what's the current world record for a marathon, do you know?
In an actual race, I think it's 201.20 odd or 230, which was done last year by Kipchoge, but he also did 2:00.29 in that Breaking 2, so the Nike Breaking 2 project, where he had, you know, a car and had a flying V in front.
2 hours and 29 seconds.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Do you reckon 2 hours to get broken?
I do. Yeah, I do. I think as well, that's the first time they tried it and they were 28 seconds off. You know, like...
That is nuts.
Yeah.
What's that? That's that'd be...
250s, pace.
That's fucked.
Oh, 240s, maybe?
That is even fucking unbelievable. I reckon the fastest I've ever done a 1K would be around 3 minutes for one effort, and I was cooked.
Funny you say that, like the last marathon... No, it's 240s, yeah, because the last marathon that he did was
what?
Berlin Marathon, and his average pace was like high 240s. And if you look at his, you know, 42... kilometer splits, so 42 1 kilometers. I think of the 42, I could run within four of them, but that's just for 1 kilometer. He's run four of those 42. I could you know,
yeah,
onto
yeah.
him,
yeah.
But then I'd be cooked, and I'd be hands on
yeah.
for ages. And look, I'm not a great runner, but that's all I could do. Four. He's doing it for 42 straight. The other 38, I couldn't keep up.
That's unbelievable,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah. So for you, you're
out of control.
If you're saying that you know you can do 3 minutes,
yeah.
great. Like that's great.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't have been able to hold on to him for a single kilometer. And he's done 42
in a row.
Absolutely
nuts, isn't it?
Yeah. Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
And do you look at someone like him and he does he in your eyes have just spot on?
He's got one of the greatest techniques you've seen.
Yeah.
He and a guy called David Rudisha.
Yeah.
Both Kenyans. Beautiful, like really, really good. There's things where, yeah, you don't see them any better.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
When it comes to running distances or just running in general, what do you recommend? I guess it's different for everyone. What do you recommend is the optimal shoe?
That's yeah. And that, yeah, it becomes pretty contentious. It just depends on the, you know, the person, what they like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about another question I had for you was running surfaces. What do you think is the best to run on for longevity?
Longevity, yeah, like as much as like the, you know, dirt path as possible, like just to try and be a little bit easier on the body. Like obviously the more concrete, the more road you run on, the harder it is going to be on your body. Yeah, if it's just, you know, like a tan surface.
Yep.
Tan is better than side path or a road.
Yeah.
You know, grass is obviously pretty good. It loads up the muscles a little bit differently because obviously it's a little bit softer. Anything that's not road, really.
It's not road.
Yeah.
So marathons aren't great for you.
Oh, look, the races itself. No, it's like marathon training. If you're going to do it all on your road, it's pretty taxing on the body.
Brutal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking nice.
Yeah.
All right. So I got a few questions. So I put up a thing on my story before. I put it up way too late, but
I think it's better off.
Still got some good questions. So question here: does Paul listen to audiobooks while he runs?
Sometimes I just listen to podcasts a little bit. I shift between the two. Sometimes I'll listen to something. Sometimes I don't want to. I just want to hear.
Mm.
I remember one of the first things I learned when I was 18, when I went out running, before hockey, I was going out and running through the trails in Canberra, didn't listen to music. And that's what actually highlighted to me the difference between my landing.
Efficient and non-efficient.
Yeah. And this is one of the things that first started to get me really interested in how I'd...
One of the guys... who runs True Health, Tori, he's done something like 11 marathons and 3 or 4 ultras or something like that. I think I stuffed it up, but he's gone for a few runs.
Yeah.
He says that he doesn't listen to music when he does marathon training at all because he likes to hear footstep and heartbeat.
Yeah.
Heartbeat, yeah.
Yeah.
And but it's interesting.
It is, isn't that?
Whereas
I'd rather have music.
I've got to listen to something.
And that's the thing, sometimes I want to just because it takes my mind off. Say I feel really poor, or if you want to go running and you want to think anything else but running.
Yeah.
Yeah, chuck audiobook in.
Yeah.
If it's audiobooks, if it's music, if it's podcasts, great. And a lot of people do. I shift between the two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes listen to the footsteps, sometimes listen to something. Yeah.
Best warm up, cool down for running.
We had
a brief discussion about this the other day.
Yeah. I don't do any warm ups.
Yeah.
I do a couple of bodyweight squats to get the blood flow. For me, just run the first kilometre or two, depending on how long you're running for. Run it slow and easy just to let the body warm up itself.
Like, okay.
What's the first thing you do if you're playing footy or basketball? If someone said warm up, what would you do?
What would I do?
Probably a couple of laps of the oval, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah, so what do you do for running?
Yeah, similar thing, I guess. Yeah.
It's like, I don't know, I just find it, you're running a straight line.
Yeah.
So as long as you start to warm up and you get the muscles moving, you're not just going out and bolting. Like, to give you an example, listening to some of these podcasts of like the elite runners, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a hack when it comes to running, like as far as running itself, but the coaching. The elite runners, like, so, the Kenyans, there's a guy called, a New Zealand guy called Jake Robertson. He was talking about his running. On a Saturday, they'll do an alternating 30K, 40K run, 30, 40, 30, 40, like week to week.
Yeah.
And he said the first 2Ks, it'll be 5 minute pace.
Yeah.
Literally just kind of get moving.
Rolling the legs over,
And that's, that's their warm up. And then like K3, bang, they're down to 3:15s. And they run the rest of it at like 3:15, 3:20 pace, 3:10.
Fuck.
So it's not stop, stretch, leg swings, all that sort of stuff. It was, run really easy to start with to get the body moving. And then start to move into where you want to be. That's a personal thing.
Yeah, and I reckon, I'll add to that as well, because I reckon your mobility and stuff seems pretty spot on, or from what I can tell anyway, and that's what works for you. And I reckon a lot of people would be very similar, like they'd just rather chuck the runners on, go for a bit of a jog and then speed it up a bit or do whatever they need to do. But if you're listening and you're someone that really struggles with hip mobility and you know you've got shit mobility, then it obviously is beneficial to spend a little bit of time beforehand doing your mobility if that's what you want to do, if you feel like you're going to actually be able to get your body in a position it needs to be in to run. But I tend to agree. Like sometimes I kind of alternate. Sometimes I'll spend a good amount of time doing mobility if I feel like I'm just tight, like real tight from whatever it may be, weights or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas other days I'll just chuck the runners on, go for a bit of a jog and then once feel good,
start have a crack. Yeah. And look, it depends on, obviously spot on. Like if you've got a little bit of an injury or niggle or something, or you need to warm up this particular area, like one of my mates had a bit of an Achilles problem, so he felt more comfortable just kind of doing some exercises and doing a bit of skipping and then going out and running.
And then
but that's specific.
Specific
to him as an individual. Like, I think, if you're running a lot, if you're doing a bit of it, then just take it easy to start with and kind of building rather than thinking you've got to do 15
minutes an hour of mobility and activation. What is the most efficient way to run downhill?
Very similar to running on the flat. You know, you want to be landing in the same spot. It's just that you're using a lot more of your eccentric movements to slow you down. You don't want to use the wrong areas to slow you down.
Yeah.
So you see in Great Ocean Road Marathon a lot of ITB problems and shin problems because they get to the top of the hills. Like it's a very rolling course. They get to the top of the hill and they think, great, I can relax and I can actually take it easy down the hill.
Yeah.
It's almost like you've got to concentrate more on the downhill than on the
uphill. I thoroughly enjoy spending time in LA and like one of my go-tos is Runyon Canyon there.
Yeah, okay.
And like the way down just...
I'm guessing, is that a trail? Like I've never been there.
So there's one part of it, you can go one way where it's like kind of more like a bit traily, I guess, and a lot steeper and a shorter distance, but a lot more elevation.
Yeah.
The other way is kind of just a windy road that gets you all the way up, and you'll end up in the same spot, but it's pretty high up. And the way down, I have to concentrate so much more, and I'm like wrecked by the time we're down the way down. I am on the way up, it's just a different, different impact, obviously.
It's loading a different area, isn't it? Mm. Like you're loading the quads more because that's the eccentric movement.
Yeah.
Rather on the way up, should be loading glutes.
Yeah.
Because that's the extension.
Mm.
However, you'd still be landing in a pretty similar position, under the hips, so that it's kind of that movement rather than in front and that braking force.
Yeah.
And you still want to be, kind of cycling underneath. And if anything, kind of shorten chop the stride down.
Down,
and, because if you're overstriding and overreaching, then that's when that impact, because not only are you going faster, you're actually going downhill. So, all of a sudden it's multiplying that impact. So chop down and kind of spin.
Yeah, okay, right.
Just kind of spin on the way down. Yeah. You still want to land in a very similar position.
Yeah, right. This will be our last question, and this might be a hard one to answer. I've developed a sore hip, in brackets, never had that before. It's by Ange, and she said, and it's definitely, it feels like it's joint, not muscle. But is there a typical deficiency that you know of with people's running technique
From running?
From running. Yeah. She's increased her running recently.
Yeah, okay.
That causes hip pain.
Yeah.
That you frequently see.
Obviously, without seeing Ange run, be how she's loading.
Yeah.
You know, like if it is joint, it'd be because she's placing, and possibly placing too much pressure in that joint. So the joint's actually taking the impact and the load rather than, you know, the muscles taking
the muscles, yeah.
You want to. And look, everyone's got their breaking point. So she might be able to do a certain amount of kilometers and the body can kind of take it and stand it.
Yeah.
But then as soon as she's increased that load,
that threshold.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, oh, hang on, now it's sore. Whereas the movement or the loading was exactly the same previously. It's just that she was within her threshold.
Okay. Yeah, right.
And now it's gone kind of without. I think thinking about like programming and all that sort of stuff, and they often talk about like that 5 or 10% increase over time.
Over time.
However, if you're not loading the correct areas, then your body in those areas don't adapt at the same rate as that increase.
Mm.
So if you're loading the correct areas and you're loading your muscles, tendons, stuff, they'll adapt a whole lot quicker.
Yeah.
Or bones and joints will.
Yeah, shit, yeah.
You know, so you can be strict and to a program and all that sort of stuff, but you might be loading wrong areas.
Wrong areas.
And they can't adapt.
Okay.
So it might be to do that. But normally, if it is joint, then it's probably copping a fair...
Come see Paul, by the sounds of it, yeah.
Come see me or someone else who does something similar to
me. Something similar, yeah.
Probably better off to see.
Exactly. All right, last question. This is just a question from me. I know some of these questions are a bit open-ended, but have you found that there's kind of like an ideal or, I guess, optimal running frequency for someone that's just kind of starting to wanting to increase their running? Say, for example, I'm doing, obviously we spoke about this before, I'm doing something relatively stupid at the moment by running every day in January. But say I was doing that same thing over the span of a week. So I wanted to do like a longer run, just a bit of a cruisy run, and then some sprints. Well, that's obviously three.
Yeah.
But what do you think is the optimal running frequency over the span of a week where you're going to be able to progress from week to week or even month to month, but without overloading to the point where you're just cooked all the time?
The thing I always suggest is less small amounts more often. So if you're...
Okay.
If you're starting off and you've never run before, you know, only do two or three per week, but only really, really small amounts.
Yeah.
And then once you want to start to increase, you only increase one of those runs.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's not all three you increase next week. It's just one of them.
Yeah.
You know, so you're still doing your three runs, but only one gets a little bit longer.
Yeah.
If you want to increase the Ks even more, you might add another run rather than increasing Ks on three.
Yeah.
Or if you want to increase... intensity, so you add sprints, only one of them you increase the sprints. So you don't do distance and intensity the next week.
Yeah, very similar to, for those who are listening, very, very similar to body composition. I talk a lot about how when people are trying to lose fat and they hit a plateau, it's often like, all right, I'm going to do one or two more cardio sessions. I'm also going to cut out all this food and then it'll be good again.
Yeah,
whereas I talk a lot about very small increase in energy expenditure or very small decrease in calorie intake or very, very, very small increase or a very, very small amount of both instead of drastic changes.
Similarly with running, because loading is not only distance, you know, like all time, like some people do their programs at time, which is fine, but intensity is the same, like that's an increase in your load.
And
the other thing is, like, if you're increasing the intensity and you think about, oh, now my long run, your long run's effectively a session. Like all of them, you're pushing yourself in a certain way.
In a certain way, different variable.
Yeah, the variable being distance. So you're pushing your body's ability to run further.
Yeah.
Rather than faster.
Or
faster further. You know, like.
Yeah, 100%.
So they're all, you're all pushing all seen as a bit of a session, I believe.
Yeah.
I'd say start off small amounts more often rather than, you know, 2 10K runs.
Yeah.
Because effectively what you're doing is just recovering for the next 3 days, and then you run 10K and then you're recovering for the next 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
Instead of just going, no, okay, and I'll do 3 to 4 kilometer runs.
Yeah.
You might not be running as much.
Yeah.
But you want to get to a point where you wake up the next morning and go, oh, I can run again.
Yeah, exactly. And exactly the same with strength training as well. People come in and just smash a body part, one body part.
Yeah.
And then not train it again until next week because that's all.
Yeah.
Whereas increasing the frequency and training it less in one session but doing the same muscle twice per week, overall you're doing more. You're not waking up anywhere near as sore.
No.
And over the span of a year, all of a sudden you've done a fuckload more volume.
Yeah.
The
more and more I listen to people who are really good at this and their programming, and you see the consistency of training, they're always training within. Yeah. They train with him. They're getting the sessions done and they're getting quality sessions done. Mm. But it's always just with him.
Yeah.
They know they could go faster and they can push themselves.
Not overreaching.
Yeah. Because then all of a sudden, as you said, 8 weeks down the track, 12 weeks down the track, they've got this cumulative effect of really good quality without actually crushing themselves.
Yeah.
So then come race day, that's the time to push.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's the time to crush yourself.
Which is what it should be like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Kelly Slater saying, I never push myself in the gym, I never push myself in training. I push myself in competition.
Yeah.
His longevity, you can't question. Yeah, exactly. He's in his 40s and he's still, obviously it comes in, he's super talented.
Yeah, yeah.
But you need to be super talented and break yourself too.
Shit, definitely.
But all these things for me, like, I'm good at the technique change and that, you know, getting the person aware of what they're doing. There's people far, far superior and who I direct to for programming for strength and for nutrition, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I stick to my specialty.
Yeah. And that's good.
Yeah, and that's what I do.
Yeah.
I don't give programs.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'll direct them to people that I trust.
Yeah. People should improve their efficiency. Yeah. So that when they do increase their volumes there, I would do it properly.
Exactly. I want training groups and I want, you know, groups of athletics. You know, like, it's help them with their efficiency.
Yeah.
Much like a, you know, like a golf pro.
Yeah.
For golf. Probably the same for running.
Yeah.
And then they go off and do their other bits for people who know much better and much more than I do.
That's awesome. Well, Paul, thanks a lot for coming on the show, mate.
Oh, mate, thanks for having me.
No, it's been great. I've learned a shitload today as well. Fucking hell. Changed everything. Life-changing today.
Well, you're not getting me to the gym now either.
Yeah, well, I did say at the start of the podcast that I was going to have to take Paul for a session first, and then by the time we do the podcast, it's cooked. But
fortunately, no one can see me behind the microphone, so you know, they don't know how big or small I am. I just don't need to be in the gym.
Jacked, yeah. All right, guys. Well, thanks for tuning into the episode today. If you've taking some value from it, which I'm assuming you will have, please do take a screenshot of today's show and post it up on your Instagram story. Tag myself and tag Paul. I'll have his Instagram username in the show notes today. And look forward to chatting to you guys again in next week's episode. Thanks again, Paul.
Thanks, Dan.
Hey.